happy. Did my lovely publicist slash friend slash assistant in the matter press the record button on our big... It's recording? So this is happening. Okay, guys, welcome to the first ever live episode of Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy. I'm sitting here with Dan Povemeyer. How's it going, buddy?
It's going well. It's going well.
You know, we have something to tell you guys. So...
This is the second time we've done this.
Yeah.
We're going to try to do the same conversation because somebody hit record and then hit it again and turned it off. Is that what happened?
That is exactly what happened. You were actually my first guest on my podcast that I've ever had.
There's no record of it in any meaningful way.
There's a record. It's just very awful audio. So who knows? Maybe we'll release the Juju cut, the Dan and Juju cut of it. So that sounds good.
We could go ADR it.
Will ADR? Ooh, yes, like we Madame Web.
We could do that, yes. Hopefully better than they did for Madame Web.
Yeah, no, I think we could do better. There's not much you could do to make that worse. But I'm glad to have you here. Thank you so much for coming, man.
Oh, this is fun. This will be fun.
This has been great. Well, so what you guys are about to see is we're about to reenact the entire conversation beat for beat, bar for bar, word for word.
We've memorized it at this point.
Exactly. So many late nights to bring you this moment. So enjoy it. A lot of hard work went into it, all right? Okay, so obviously you guys have been listening to the podcast, Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy, where we talk about our favorite movies, your favorite people talk about their favorite movies. But again, we talked about Jaws in depth the last time, because that is your favorite movie, right, Dan?
That is my favorite movie.
Okay, so I really want to like talk about that just a little bit, because I want them to hear what they couldn't hear the first time.
When I say Jaws is my favorite movie, I don't mean that Jaws is what I believe is the best film.
Right.
You know, like there's a difference between what I think is a better film and what is my favorite movie.
But I Jaws, think that's very important to differentiate.
Jaws is definitely my favorite movie.
Yeah, like for instance, like my
favorite... Not that I think it's not as good as some of the movies. Oh. It's just a different kind of movie.
Oh, it's a movie that's like personal to you.
Yes.
Right? Like exactly. I would never in a million years say like my personal favorite movie of all time, right? Yes. My number one is better than something like, say, like Shawshank Redemption, which on my list, it's like on my like number three or four of favorites, right? But I think it's better than Her.
Right.
But they're all on my perfect movies of all time list.
Like, but Her has a more special place in your heart.
Exactly. That's good. So that's very important. So like, can you like talk to the people about the first time you saw Jaws, what was going through your head when that sucker came out? Like, I really want to know, like, what little Dan was thinking when the shark ate that little boy.
Well, I was, you know, I was a teenager, so I was probably like 13, I think, when Jaws came out.
Right.
And I had read the book and was just fascinated by it, and we had gone out with one of my father's best friends had a boat. And we lived in Mobile, Alabama, on the Gulf Coast there. And we went out into the Gulf and found a place that had a lot of sharks. And we caught a shark, which was about a 6-foot thresher shark or something like that. And so I was really into sharks and really into Jaws. And then the movie was coming out and was being hailed as this, you know, big blockbuster, and it really sort of was the first big blockbuster. Mm-hmm. And we went to see it opening weekend, and I remember I was sitting next to my dad and my mom and my sister. I don't know if my sister came, but my dad was next to me, and he had a thing full of popcorn. And when they're looking at the shark hole in the bottom of Ben Gardner's boat and the head floats out, he jumped and spilled popcorn all over the place and screamed. And I screamed too, but I was like 13 years old.
Of course,
it made sense for me to scream. My dad was sort of this mountain of a man to me. and I was like, and not only did he scream, but he didn't look weird screaming because everybody in the audience did one of these. It was like, you know, you could see everybody go up and down at one time.
His
and I was like,
manlyhood was protected by the fact that everybody else screamed.
Yes, exactly. And I just remember thinking, how did that happen? Mm-hmm. Who made this thing that made us all feel all of these emotions all the way through? And it became just this adventure. Once they get on the boat with Quint, it became this just adventure that just dragged you along. And then there was that really one quiet moment where they tell the story about the Indianapolis.
Yeah.
And then it just keeps going and going and going and builds to this one big moment of him with the shooting the I don't want to ruin the
son of a bitch.
Yeah. You know,
who here hasn't seen Jaws? Raise your hand right now.
But if you have not seen Jaws,
one person. Okay. I see one person there in the back. Two people.
You need to see this movie. It is as good an adventure film as exists.
Mm-hmm.
It's as good a horror movie in some ways.
Oh,
as yeah.
It's a horror movie for sure.
It's got so much comedy and heart and every single shot. And I remember that was the first time I really looked at filmmaking as an art form and thought, oh my God, this shot cuts together with this shot so well, and this shot, and look at the lighting they're doing here, and look at how it was just such a singular experience for me at the time, and that's what made me look up Steven Spielberg and see that, oh, there's a person who's in charge of making all of these decisions that make this as entertaining as it is.
Right.
I think that's what I want to do. I want to be the person making the decisions and making visual entertainment, because I was a graphic artist I started really young making money as doing pen and ink limited editions, animals and scenery and stuff like that, and selling them in art shows and stuff. And I made enough doing that to buy a Super 8 movie camera and movie projector and an editing, a little editor. And I started making my own movies back then, but it was all because of Jaws.
Like little Steven Spielberg in The Fablemans.
Yeah.
And in his real life, which
exactly.
is based off of.
Yes.
You know, I really like how you talked about the editing of that movie, and I love how we're doing this right after Women's History Month, because that was edited by a woman. A lot of people don't know that. Jaws was edited by a woman.
Oh, yeah.
And
Fields.
Yeah, and I believe she won best editing at the Oscars that year as well. I'm not 100% sure on that, but I love that fact.
The scene that is the scene that most people remember as the scariest scene of that movie was shot in her swimming pool.
What?
They poured milk into her swimming pool because Spielberg was watching a cut of the movie and he says, you know, there's this scene here. I bet you I can get another big scream out of people if we shoot something. And so they mocked up the side of the boat and shot that in her swimming pool because they weren't out in Martha's Vineyard anymore.
Right.
And so it was like a late addition to the movie.
She was like, I'll do it my damn self. we'll do it at my house.
Yeah.
Also, I love talking about Jaws. It is a horror for sure. I don't think there's any question on that, especially in that opening scene where Chrissy.
It's terrifying.
You know, it's terrifying. Absolutely. The tension, the way she sounds.
People did not want to go out into the water after that.
It took me a minute after I saw that movie.
The first time, because we used to go out every weekend, because we lived on the Gulf of Mexico, and we would go down to this island down there and go out into the water every weekend, because it was only a 30-minute drive. And so we would do that. So the first time, it was me and my 13-year-old friends went out into the water after Jaws. Everybody had seen Jaws opening weekend, and the next weekend we went down to Dauphin Island and went out into the water.
Right.
And we're all joking about sharks and stuff like that. And it is the only time this has ever happened when I was there. And I'm looking out towards the ocean, and my friend is looking out this way, and we're just sort of riding the waves. We're only in this deep water, right?
It's nothing. Yeah, you're chilling.
And we're just chilling and talking. We might have been on a floaty. I don't even remember what it was. But
just
I looked
in the
out
movie.
And just past him, only about 15 feet past him, a big black dorsal fin came out of the water and went back down into the water.
Fuck that.
And I was like, what do I do? Because if I say I just saw a shark, they're not going to believe me, because we've been joking.
Of course.
There's no way that people are going to.
And then somebody does something stupid and starts splashing.
I'm just like, hey guys. Everybody, because all of my friends are out there. Hey, everybody, come on into the beach. Hold on, I got to show you something. It's going to be great. You're going to love this. And then they're like, okay, sure. They all followed me into the I got everybody in the water. Realized, okay, now that we're here, look out there and let's just wait for a little bit. And they're like, what? What are you talking about? Everything like this. And this freaking dorsal fin came back up and went back down, and they were like,
"Oh,
like
shoot."
That, and there was a girl in the group who just said, "That's a dolphin," and it was, they were dolphins. There was like a whole school of dolphins.
Listen,
but I had never seen a dolphin down there at all, and
right.
But it was like, it was a big fin. These things were like, you know, 6 to 8 feet long.
Yeah,
and you know, and we eventually went back out there, but it was just like the first time I ever saw a dorsal fin.
Mm-hmm.
Was literally the weekend after we saw Jaws.
If you know what I know about dolphins, for those of you guys who do your dolphin research, I still would be terrified.
Yes, well, they're big animals.
I still would be like, you know what?
They're big animals who could mess you up if they wanted to.
In many different ways. We're not going to get into that. This is a movie podcast, everyone. Yes. Daniel's looking at me like, what? One of my favorite like lines in the movie, because again, it does comedy so well, it does horror so well, but one of my favorite lines in the movie is a comedic line where a homeboy, the mayor, is over here saying, "Oh, we got to get people like in the beach because like we need to make money, even though there's shark eating people." And homeboy goes, "Listen, I'm not gonna risk my life for someone who's lining up to be a hot meal."
Gonna sit here and talk to somebody who's lining up to be a hot lunch.
He said, "I'm out." I'm like, "Yeah." I was like, "I fucks with this guy right here," because he was like, "You know what? Yeah, you can't even change their minds, man." But
well, the addition of, you know, I'd also read the book and it was substantially different than the movie. The character that Richard Dreyfuss played gets killed by the shark and shot through the neck accidentally by the guy after having an affair with the chief's wife.
What?
And it's like a very different
in the movie
story.
He's a family man.
He's a and the chief and he are best friends and stuff, and it really works better. But that's why they didn't kill him off in the movie, because they felt like, oh, he's way. Like we would make people angry if we killed him off, because Richard Dreyfuss came in and he was so charming in that role, and I think it just worked better with
probably would have got an Oscar playing an asshole cheating with his best friend's girl.
Yes,
girl.
Maybe.
Getting shot.
Maybe
it seems like an overkill. Shot and eaten by the shark. It's pretty insane. I know we were like talking like in the back room about like some current stuff that is happening, and there's a movie that I've been hearing about quite a bit. Like I went out and I saw, like, you know, Godzilla. You know, it was cool. It was dope. Who saw Godzilla in here? People saw the new Godzilla?
All right.
It's dumb, crazy, good fun, for sure. I'm going to see, like, Late Night with the Devil. I'm really excited about that. I'm watching X-Men 97. It's good stuff. But of all the things that I've either watched or heard of watching, you and my boy Nikhil Clayton put me onto this movie.
Oh, I know exactly what you're...
What's the movie called? It has to do with beavers?
The movie is called Hundreds of Beavers. And if you live... in the Los Angeles area or in Chicago or any of the big cities, you can actually go see it on a screen, on a big screen before it gets released. And how can I describe this movie?
Please describe it. He was trying to describe it to me back there, and I was like,
first of all, it's in black and white.
Mm-hmm. I love black and white.
It looks like most of it was shot on a green screen in somebody's garage and then compiled in After Effects. And there's some of it that's shot out in the woods with snow and stuff like that. But it looks like there's no dialogue in this movie. It's a silent black and white movie
about beavers
that looks like, it feels like a live action cartoon in a way that it's very hard to describe.
Mm-hmm.
It feels like David Lynch directed a Wile E. Coyote cartoon that then went on for an hour and 48 minutes. It's not a short movie. But you are never bored. You never look at it. But when it's over, you're like, oh, there's no more of this. It is just sight gag after sight gag and building a story. And it's just this marvelous thing that I'm so impressed it even exists. They made it for $120,000. And I believe that the people who made it are the ones who are distributing it. They didn't even get a distributor. They're going around the country and finding theaters that will play it and say, hey, if you play this, then the director will come and speak at the 9 o'clock show. I was upset I didn't go to the 9 o'clock show.
I was invited.
I went to like a 4 o'clock show and they're like, well, you know, at 9 o'clock, the director's coming. And I was like, should I come back and see it two times in 24 hours?
It sounds like it's worth it the way you describe it.
It is so much fun. I've told my whole writing crew to go see it, because I feel like it's just so full of intelligent, smart gag writing, and I love any movie that you can watch without dialogue and still tell what's going on because
but you don't like Wall-E though. But you don't like Wall-E though.
I like the first 45 minutes of Wall-E, which is what everybody likes about Wall-E.
True.
But usually, you're the only person who's really stuck to your guns, because usually people say...
I got big guns. I love Wall-E.
People say they love Wall-E, and I say, I don't know if you really love Wall-E. You love the first 45 minutes, and then they go...
Fakes.
Oh, that's right. There's all that stuff with the people at the end that I don't even really remember or care about.
Yes, the big jelly people. They try to put the shoe into the
machine to get back to Earth.
I don't want to. I don't want to survive. I want to live.
I've tried watching the whole movie a couple of times since the first time I saw it, and I always just get bored and end up. I probably watch it maybe three times all the way through. I've watched the first 45 minutes of Wall-E probably 20 times.
Because it's worth it.
That is a great movie, but I just wish it had been more focused on those two characters, because those are the characters that I care about. I didn't care about any of the other characters.
We're going to fight about this until the day we die. And who here actually likes all of Wall-E? I need to know, right? Yes! Yes, you guys are awesome. Okay. Yes. But everyone else, I saw your hands who weren't up. You can leave promptly now. It's fine. Taking note of all of you.
It's one of those things. I realize that I have an unpopular opinion, but usually when I bring up everything else to people, they're like, oh, yeah, okay, no, I don't like that as much as the rest of it.
Yes.
The other thing I tell people is, for animators, Fantasia is this big thing. And I say, Fantasia 2000, the one that they did in 2000, is a much better movie than Fantasia. And
people
think of that as heresy. And I say, well, they say, I love Fantasia. I absolutely love Fantasia. And I say, well, you don't love Fantasia as much as you think you do, because I know something about your relationship with Fantasia that you don't even know, but you'll know it as soon as I say it. And they go, what in the world are you talking about?
Oh,
I say,
gosh.
You have never sat through Fantasia without falling asleep. And nobody has. The reason I know that is because it is impossible to make it through the Ave Maria scene where you watch 20 monks that are just like salt shakers travel a mile and a half walking in real time while Ave Maria plays. That is designed to put you to sleep. Any movie that you cannot make it through without falling asleep.
You're spitting right now.
I think that's a problem.
You're actually spitting, because I cannot remember the last, I can't remember the last time that I watched the whole thing. I didn't. It didn't happen. It never happened to me. But I just love your approach to making people realize that they don't like the things they love as much as they think they do.
I like to point out people's hypocrisy to themselves.
I really want to see this on camera now, where you approach someone, you say hey, you like Fight Club. Yes, I love Fight Club. You don't like it as much as you think you do.
Oh, people like Fight Club for all the right reasons. I don't have a problem with Fight Club. Fight Club is a movie I saw on video, went to sleep, woke up the next morning, and was late to work the next day because I wanted to watch it again.
Oh, wow.
To see if it really worked, because, spoiler, there's a sort of a twist in it, and I wanted to make sure that it actually worked, because a lot of times you see a movie with a twist and you go back and watch it and it's like, that doesn't really work. Not only does it work, but David Fincher is beating you over the head with it over and over again. He's smacking you in the face and telling you what the twist is.
Then you watch it again, you're just like, oh wow, it's okay.
It's a good movie. I like it.
It's a great movie. But back to, I like how we talked about three movies just to come back to the beavers, because I really want to get to this beaver conversation.
The beavers is fantastic.
What is it about?
Hundreds of beavers. It is about a guy trying to survive in a, after this, an avalanche, I think, destroys the restaurant that he has at the bottom of the thing. He comes out and it's winter, it's the middle, it's full of snow, and there's all these beavers, and he's trying to earn enough money, I believe, he's trying to better his life by becoming a trapper.
Okay.
And
he's trying to trap the beavers.
And he's just trying to survive. It's basically sort of like, you know, Sylvester and Tweety is just the cat is hungry and wants the bird, and
right.
and Wile E. Coyote just wants the bird because it's basically yeah. a Wile E. Coyote.
Like it's the setup, right? Yeah. He's like trying to eat, and then the beavers.
Yes.
Do they fight back?
Yeah, no. It goes to places you're not expecting it to go to. It gets pretty epic for a movie that has maybe five people in it and then a bunch of people in beaver costumes that looks like something that they, like a cheap beaver costume they would wear to an event like this, you know? And there's literally hundreds. It's spectacular.
Okay.
It's spectacular. The opening credits don't happen till like 40 minutes in.
What? What?
And the title card doesn't happen till the very last 15 minutes or something
that.
Like that.
I love this.
It is marvelous. It is one of my favorite experiences going to a theater.
Okay, hold on. Now I got to, I'm sorry. I'm going to look up this right now, live, real time.
You're gonna watch the trailer?
Let's watch the trailer together. There's no sound. I don't think we can do the trailer
sound.
No,
we won't be able to do that.
So it's called 100 Beavers? Is that what it is?
No, Hundreds of Beavers.
Hundreds of Beavers. Everyone, yes. We're going to experience what this looks like in real time.
Yes.
What is that? What is that? Okay, of beavers. I'm looking at NBA stuff, okay? I'm a man. I love basketball, okay? I'm looking at my scores.
You better watch what you have on your desktop.
I got good stuff on my desk.
There's
Wi-Fi.
Children present.
The Wi-Fi's out. It's okay. Okay. It's fine. But we'll look it up. Everyone look up Hundreds of Beavers
now. It'll be on streaming in not too long, I'm sure. But it has a 98.5 audience score on Rotten Tomatoes, because everybody who sees it goes and wants to tell everybody else they know.
I'm looking at people on their phones, like looking it up and being like, like okay, it's, for sure.
It's so much fun, and it's the closest thing I've seen to a visual, like a live action cartoon.
Okay,
just in the art direction of it and the pacing and everything, it's marvelous.
Okay, see, this is something that like you wouldn't expect to be as good as it is when you like kind of first hear about it, look at it, see it, and I want to like kind of pick your brain on this. We didn't talk about this the first time we talked, but I want to like find out like what is like one of the worst movies that you've ever seen. I remember.
I have several.
Oh, let's get let's get into it.
Well, back in the 80s, it was Tarzan the Ape Man with Bo Derek, which had no discernible story that I could tell, but it had Richard Harris doing some really great acting in it, so that was good.
Love
Armageddon is one of the worst movies I've ever seen.
Armageddon.
It's I
is that
can't
the one with
say
space dementia?
Enough bad things about that with Bruce Willis Liv Tyler.
Hey,
and,
great song though.
And Ben Affleck.
Great song. Steven Tyler kills that.
There's things that elevate it because it had an Aerosmith song in it. Nope. But it's not good.
Wait, that's not the one with Ben Affleck, right? Because I know there was like The Rock.
Here's my least favorite movie I've ever seen in a theater, and I sort of almost have to explain what was happening in the theater at the time, because I went and saw it with my wife at the time and some friends of ours, and so there was a bunch of adults in a mm-hmm. row, and I didn't feel comfortable asking them all if they wanted to leave because it would have caused too much, you know, because there were other people watching the movie who might be enjoying it. It's a movie called Inherent Vice. Has anybody seen this?
I've heard of Inherent Vice. Haven't seen it. Haven't heard good things.
Like, I literally sat in the movie theater and thinking, you know, I could just go to the bathroom and then not come back. How much trouble will I be in if I go to the bathroom and then walk out into the street and hail a cab and go home and take a nap or something, and then, like, you know, text them later and say, well, you know, when you're done watching that piece of trash... Like, it was so mind-numbingly boring disjointed and bad to me that I literally thought that was a better option.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't do it because I thought it might be rude because we had invited this other couple to come out with us that night. And I thought it would just become a weird thing. And so what I did, we were in a stadium seating theater, was try very hard to go to sleep.
trying hard to go to sleep during this movie.
Yes, because it would have been preferable to seeing or hearing this movie. But every time I would almost get to sleep, there'd be a noise loud enough that would wake me up.
It was by design.
It was by design. Like torture. I felt like like if I could have just gone out into the lobby and gotten waterboarded, I might have preferred that. It was that's my least favorite movie I've seen, and it's by a filmmaker who I love. Mm. That's Paul Thomas Anderson.
No. Well, is yeah. it? Yeah, no, it is. It is.
And so
everybody has a stinker. Everyone has a stinker.
And I've liked so many of his movies so much. And
Did that tarnish your love for him just a little bit?
It tarnished it just a little bit. But what it really tarnishes, like I had a young filmmaker friend who was trying to get into filmmaking, mm-hmm. Who was like the child of some other kids, of some other people that I knew, and he told me that was his favorite movie, and I thought less of him as a human being. I cut all ties with him because of that. I was like, oh. All right, we have nothing to talk about.
Damn. Like, you're not going to help him with his filmmaking career, are
yeah,
you?
Yeah, no. I was like, no, because I don't want to keep that stuff happening.
I don't want no
more. I don't want somebody to go out there and say, I'm going to make the next Inherent Vice. Oh my God, it was like Paul Thomas Anderson had seen, like a Coen Brothers movie,
yeah,
and tried to make a Coen Brothers mm-hmm. movie, but didn't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so everything that was supposed to be weird and quirky was just deathly boring and didn't make any sense to the rest of the story. Oh, I can't even tell you what happened in that movie after I came out. Not just because I was trying to put myself to sleep. Mm-hmm. It was not good.
The only experience that I've had with like a truly horrible movie that gave me that type of reaction to where like it affected a relationship, or at least a relationship that I could have had with someone, was, it's going to sound strange, because I've seen a lot of bad movies like VelociPastor, awful movie, but I saw X-Men Apocalypse, and like, I know it's not like the worst movie out there. There's movies that are more like fantastic for one. There's worse movies, Madame Web. You know, there's more movies.
But, yeah, exactly. Madame Web is a new low.
But it was no, actually, this wasn't X-Men Apocalypse. I hated that for another reason. It was this one. It was the original Suicide Squad.
Oh my God!
It was the original Suicide Squad, and I remember watching it, and I remember being just like shaking because it was so bad, right?
What you don't want to engender in people at the end of it, you don't want people to go, what happened? Not only what happened in the screen, but how did this movie ever get made badly?
It just reeked of like no one knew what they were doing. The only one who knew what they were doing was Margot Robbie and Will Smith.
She's great.
And Viola Davis, right? Yes. Like there's some gems in there.
Yes.
And I was happy to just kind of like let people like enjoy it.
Well, there were just a lot of weird, bad decisions like the Cara Delevingne character, who was so creepy when you first met her, and as that character was great, and then they just made her all glam and weird, like she was a...
It was the walk that was killing me. Like every time she was doing like this little shake.
Yeah, and they put her in like a prom dress.
Yeah.
I don't even know what happened.
No, it was just like the ending where like everybody was doing slow-mo for some reason, where like King Shark showed up, did like this weird slide on the ground, somebody threw a bomb. At this point, I was just like over it, like this is so stupid.
Yeah,
but usually,
and then the reboot they did with
so much better
James Gunn is one of my favorite.
It's incredible.
Movies.
It's so incredible.
Good. Yeah,
and so like I remember
it's a DC property, right?
Yes.
Yeah, mm-hmm. that's maybe like that and Wonder Woman are probably my two favorite DC movies.
So this specifically, this was the meanest that I've ever been to someone.
Really?
When it came to
I
want to
hear
the meanest I've ever been, and I still look back on this and I don't regret it.
Okay.
So after the movie was done, right? I was like, I think it was like Rick Ross's Purple Lamborghini playing, and I'm getting up out of my seat, and this guy behind me goes, man, that was so much better than Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh.
And I
kid there's nothing you could have done to that person that would not have been warranted.
I kid you not, man. Like on instinct, it was I could not control myself involuntarily. I turned around and said, no, it's not. Shut the fuck up. You don't know anything about movies, bitch. And I walked away. I walked away. And like I like immediately after I said it, you could tell he was shocked. I was shocked walking away, like, oh God, we're gonna fight in the theater. Like, you know. But I still feel that way because it felt like he was just saying that. Because he, like, at the time, like, DC was trying to do whatever Marvel was trying to do. It was very clear. And you could tell he was just one of those fans who just hated Marvel for the sake of it at the time. And he was willing to, like, tear down a movie that's clearly really good.
Yes.
To, like, prop up this piece of garbage movie.
Yeah.
Just to be like, oh, yeah, man. Like, you sacrificed Guardians of the Galaxy?
Yes.
For Suicide Squad?
It's.
Come on.
That's, like, that's not a defensible position.
I couldn't let that lie. I couldn't let Sleeping Dogs lie on that one. It was. And I've never been that mean to someone ever again. Like, I'll look at people sideways, but I've never, like, vomited anger on someone like that for that one.
You know, to me, most discussions about a creative art form are, there's not really a right or a wrong, although I'm usually right, is what I like to think.
Let it be known.
But there are times where people are just objectively wrong, and that would be one of those times where it's like, what movie did you just watch? It's like, Inherent Vice is your favorite movie? Have you seen other movies?
Yes.
Have you seen anything other than because that's
it has
the one,
to have been the only
that's
movie
the one
you've seen
way
ever.
that makes sense to say that is if that's the only movie you've
seen.
Well,
what's a movie you think is like objectively like good, like that everyone can agree on that you don't think anyone?
I think the Godfather 1 and 2 are the two best American films.
Does anybody want to disagree with that?
I think those are ones that I just watch. You know, like they came out with a version on VHS. That was all of that cut together chronologically, because The Godfather is sort of the middle of that story,
right.
And Godfather 2 has stuff that
it's
happened
like a prequel
earlier,
and
then stuff that happened after. And Francis Ford Coppola cut together what he called the Godfather the Saga,
okay,
and it has like 20 minutes of extra footage in it. And it starts back when Vito was very very young, and then goes all the way through the end of that story, and it's 7.5 hours long, and I got it on VHS, and thinking, this is a stupid purchase. How often am I going to be able to sit down and watch a 7.5 hour movie?
Little did you know.
And the answer is at least once a year. and I would just like, there would always be a Sunday where I'd be home and I'd be like, I don't have anything to do today, but I could put this in and watch the whole thing. And I would watch the entire thing.
Let it be known that while a lot of us were working like our 8 hour full time shifts, and Dan was watching Godfather for
That's
most
what
of
I was
it.
Doing.
For 90%
That's
of that
what
shift.
I was doing.
Was the VHS like split apart though? Because I remember like
it was
things
on
that long.
At least two tapes. It may have been on
right.
It may have been on three.
Remember the Titanic like VHS? How that you had to like have like two tapes?
Yes.
It was like
exactly.
The biggest, like, I don't know how young you guys are in here, but it was like the fattest VHS. It was like about this big. Because it was so much movie.
Yeah, for the Gen Zers, VHS was a way of watching movies. I remember we had a on Phineas. We had a younger person in the writers' room. This girl, Danny Viteri, who we were talking about how technology had changed from VHS before VHS, you know, CDs and LPs and stuff like that. And we were sort of going back to you know, like we were in DVDs at the time, and we were talking about LaserDiscs and VHS
I
before
still remember
that.
My first
and
DVD.
She said, "What? How did you watch it before VHS?" And we said, "Oh, you watched it when it came on TV, and it was the and she was like, what do you mean? It's like
no
what was the thing? It's like well, you had to be in front of the TV, and there were commercial breaks where you could go to the bathroom and stuff like that. But you had to be in front of the TV. You had to like check the TV guide." And she was like incensed. She was like, "Wait, you mean before VHS, you couldn't own a movie?" And it was like, "No, you could.
It was
you couldn't really even own a movie when you first got VHS because they were just too expensive.
You just use it to like tape home movies." And
yeah,
like
exactly. And she was angry that time had ever existed because she had never lived in a world where you couldn't hold it in the palm of your hand and watch it on an airplane. It's, you know, look, it's a lot has changed.
Look, I remember, see, this is how you know, because I literally, in the middle of that set, there was no TiVo, and there's Gen Zers who don't even know what TiVo is.
Anyway, yes, yes.
Which is like, it's like.
You used to have to watch TV linearly. Like,
I don't know what that is. Like,
TiVo was the first time you could pause live TV. Or and then like go to the bathroom and come back and then speed up through it, or
it was so
fast
cool.
forward through the commercials if you watched it the next day or mm-hmm. something, where we just, you know, it was like a.
I got a TiVo like Jaws yeah. tonight, like you know. It was
yeah,
like a huge
exactly.
Thing. You
and
got TiVo,
and you
what?
Could go through your the stuff that you would TiVo'd, and you could watch it.
Oh my god,
that
gosh.
Didn't exist till.
That was like I was late 2000s.
I was yeah, it was late 1990s.
I remember like walking into a friend's house, like he was like one of the first friends to get TiVo, yeah. and like when you had TiVo, you had like this very specific looking remote. I know you guys know the white one with the big TiVo button on it. It was like this big yellow button that says TiVo.
Yes.
And so like I walked into my friend's house and I saw this remote sitting on a couch, and I was like, he's rich. Like,
yes, exactly. That's what
he
we
got
had.
Money.
Well, that's what it was like when VHS came out. There was like one family in the neighborhood who had money, and they'd have like this big, and it was like this big, like that, and about as wide as this table. And it would, and you would press a button, and this thing would go out of it, and you would
put
stick the VHS or the beta.
Yeah, the beta. Like that,
in, and you would press a button, and it would go in, and then you'd have to watch through the previews and all that sort
we
of
just
stuff.
Lost all of our young audience yes, in the crowd. They're just like, they're all like, this oh, old talk. Why didn't you just bring out the record player?
Yes.
But I do remember.
But it's amazing that we went from that time where like I remember the first color TV that I saw, and that my daughters have a device they can hold in their hand mm-hmm. and watch any movie they've ever thought of while we're on a plane.
On a plane, yeah.
You know, and it's in yeah. better quality than I would have seen it on like a big screen TV back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's strange.
My first DVD was Shrek.
Shrek, yes.
It was Shrek. And I remember like yes. back before they knew how to package DVDs, I went to a Costco and like they had like the regular DVD package, but for some reason they had like this long black like thing on it. And I remember like bringing it.
So you couldn't walk out the.
So you couldn't walk. Yes, I guess that's what
exactly,
that was.
Because
right?
they were expensive. It was a shoplifting deterrent.
Right. And like.
That's what it was. They would give you like a big, you know.
It's like everyone would see you walking out.
Why is there
DVD.
30 pounds of plastic attached to this this VHS?
They could have. This was like before the security things and whatnot, yeah. too. It's just this long black thing that if you're walking out, you just see it protruding
yes,
out of your back. It's like
exactly.
security measure. Yes. But I remember, but we didn't even have the DVD player. Like we had a Dell. Like a Dell computer
that you could play,
you know. So I literally sat in this like little
watching on something like this.
It's my uncle's office chair, and I like have to go all the way up to the top, and I'm like in his computer just like watching Shrek. And that's when
times.
We discovered like DVD menus and like behind the scenes stuff.
And we also had to walk to and from school uphill in the snow both ways
while pushing a hoop down a dirt
yes,
road with
exactly.
a stick.
Yes, exactly.
This is really making me feel old. But like it said. I've reached that age, but as we wrap this whole thing up, man, like do you have any like movies that you're really excited to see like this year that you're just like really jonesing to get at?
I don't really have anything on the you know like I was looking forward to Dune, and I think Dune 2 was really good. I've been so busy because right now I'm making more Phineas and Ferb. You guys, and I'm also making Hamster and Gretel at the same time. Mm-hmm. So my time is really spoken for a lot, mm-hmm. and you know, and during the day. So I don't even really know what's coming next. Movie wise,
okay. I mean, it's so funny because, like, as the movie guy, people say, like, what is your most anticipated movie? And, like, the way my brain works, like, I have to make a list and look at the list to know, like, what's coming out,
right?
So, like, if anybody asks me on the spot, I'm like, I don't freaking know, like, Nosferatu from Robert Eggers. that's about it,
yeah. You know? I, like, unless I'm seeing, I saw a trailer for a new Omen movie that looked
really good. The
first
Omen,
good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it looks
that,
really good.
That looked really spooky and crazy, and I loved those movies when I was younger. So that may be the one. There's a lot of them that I've seen the trailer for, and I'm mm-hmm. always like, okay, I'll go see that.
Right.
But that's what I'm sort of jonesing for.
For sure. All right. Yeah. Well, guys, thank you so much for joining me and Dan on this episode of, you know, I forgot the name of my podcast right now, Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy. Thank you so much for coming. We got a good crowd, and this is actually being recorded, so we can actually put this out to the world for you guys
to
listen to. But
we'll see. That's what we thought last time.
That's what we thought. Paul, is the button red? Is it red?
Okay. We got a thumbs up from Paul.
All right, for sure. Right, we're going to get a selfie with everybody here, so if everyone can gather around like we like each other. But thank you so much for joining Get Wrecked with Straw Hat Goofy. Thank you, guys.